I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Coming up, Monday was World AIDS Day. We'll talk about how one American city is trying to make headway in the fight against HIV by encouraging more people to get tested. We'll have that story for you in just a few minutes. But first, Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice is in India today, trying to help ease tensions between that nation and neighboring Pakistan. 3 days of coordinated terrorist attacks in Mumbai, India last week left more than 150 people dead and hundreds wounded. And just today, explosives were found hidden in a bag in Mumbai's main train station, said to be left over from the attacks. Indian and U.S. authorities believe that the perpetrators are linked to a militant Islamist group based in Pakistan, a development that threatens the already fragile peace between the two countries, which both have nuclear capabilities and which have fought 3 wars in 5 decades. But while that shorthand description might explain how the country's leaders are responding to the attacks, we wondered how last week's violence is affecting the complicated political, ethnic, and religious relationships between the Indian and Pakistani people. So we've called upon a diverse group of people with deep roots in both countries. They are Shujaat Nawaz. He's a native of Pakistan. He's a political analyst and author of Crossed Swords, Pakistan, Its Army, and the Wars Within. Also with us is Zofin Ibrahim. She's a freelance reporter based in Karachi, Pakistan. Siddharth Mir is a cinematographer who lives in Mumbai. He's Hindu. And Mubashir Mohideen is a musician and a Kashmiri American. He's currently living in New York. I welcome you all and thank you all so much for speaking with us.
Good to be here.
Siddharth, I'm going to start with you because you live in Mumbai and you live close to the community center, the Jewish community center, which was one of the targets of the terrorists. I just wanted to ask where you were when the attacks began and what went through your mind as you were hearing about this.
Well, I was at home when this all happened. We were actually supposed to go out for a friend's birthday party to a nearby restaurant, which is behind the Taj. And I was just about to leave the house, and my father told me to turn on the television and just, you know, wait for a bit and see what the problem is. Because when we turned on the TV, there were news reports about a gunfight that was going on outside Cafe Leopold. And everyone was panicking, and there were people running on the streets downstairs. And soon, like within half an hour, all of the streets were cleared up. And there were reports of grenades going off outside Leopold, and then all of this action shifted to the CST train station.
And Siddharth, just as briefly as you can, how quickly did the talk turn to who might be responsible, and what was that conversation? What were you hearing?
Well, it took a while. Everyone was confused. Everyone was just afraid for that first day. Like, no one really stepped out of their house. No one really knew what to think of what had happened, and it took up till the third day for people to actually think about who had done this. And the investigation had not even started because the siege was still on at the Oberoi, Trident, and at the Taj. So there wasn't really much information that the police forces had to conduct an investigation. They were waiting for this entire operation to get over before they could really start, you know, picking up clues and finding out who actually did this.
Zofin, you were in Karachi, yes, at the time?
Yes.
How was this reported where you were, and what was being said?
I'll tell you, the first reaction was, of course, of shock mixed with grief. And then before we knew it, the finger-pointing had started.
And by finger-pointing, you mean what? Tell me exactly what you mean.
Oh, I mean, in not so many direct words, but the militants were from foreign land. They said neighboring countries, and of course it meant Pakistan.
And do you find that not credible, or do people not believe that, or is it just painful to hear it?
No, of course, you know, we ourselves are victims of extremism and militancy, but the anger was because their attack was not even over yet before this blame game had started.
And by the blame game, who are you talking about? Are you talking about government leaders, or are you talking about the sense that individual Indians blame Pakistan?
I blame the political leadership, but as well as the media in India were playing up on the words of the political leadership.
Siddharth, do you feel that individual Indians are angry at Pakistan?
Well, they're angry actually at the political leadership for failing to prevent this attack, because a lot of information that has come out right now is that they had intelligence reports about us attack from the sea route and nothing was done about it. A lot of people are, you know, asking for a war against Pakistan. In fact, at this moment right now, there are peace protests going on outside the Taj at the Gateway and other cities. And it's very surprising because there was supposed to be a peace protest and there are people who are actually advocating war at these protests. So it's really sad.
If you're just joining us, this is Tell Me More from NPR News. We're talking about the aftermath of the recent attacks in India with a diverse panel of guests with roots in India, Pakistan, and the disputed region of Kashmir. Shusha, is what we're hearing here that people believe, that some people within India believe that the Pakistani government is somehow complicit in these attacks? You see, I'm not sure what I'm hearing. Is it that individuals are mad at individual militants group, or do somehow people feel that an entire country is implicated, or is it the leaders of those countries? Can you help us sort this out?
Well, from all accounts, the Indian government hasn't accused the Pakistan government of any complicity in
this. Has not?
No. But what they have asked Pakistan, based on the information they feel that they've received from at least one of the militants who was captured, and other evidence that they say that they have asked Pakistan to act against a particular group in Pakistan, the Lashkar-e-Tayyiba, which has been active in the past helping the Kashmiri Mujahideen, and which has been implicated in previous attacks inside India. And those attacks also brought the countries nearly to the brink of war. At least the most recent one, the big one, was in 2001, December, when militants attacked the Indian Parliament. And that brought the Indian and Pakistan armies face to face for about 10 months. And the threat of war was averted largely because the governments themselves realized that it was not worth going to war over this incident, and also because of the intervention of the United States.
Is there a difference between grassroots opinion and elite opinion here in either country or in both countries?
Well, I don't think people in either country want a war. Both countries have a very large number of people who live below the poverty line. There is a gap between the very rich and the very poor in both countries, and both are facing very difficult economic times as a result of the global slowdown. And that is a huge issue in Pakistan, for sure, with inflation 30% or more, and food prices rising, and power shortages and so on. So there are other concerns for the ordinary people. This is a concern for government, as Siddharth said quite rightly. The first inclination within India was to blame the government for not protecting the people of India, because as information...
You mean the Indian government?
The Indian government.
For Indians to blame their own government.
Absolutely.
For not protecting their
citizens. There's a lot of anger because they felt that the politicians had failed them at the state level as well as at the federal level.
But what about what Zofin is talking about? A sense in Pakistan that the whole... Zofin, do I have this right, that the whole country is being blamed?
No. Honestly speaking, people do not have a lot of confidence in the government. It's a new government. It's an untested government. And it comes with some baggage also.
So, Mubashir, I'd like to bring you in. You live in New York. Your family is from Kashmir. Now, this region is technically a part of India, but it's also claimed by Pakistan. And it's been reported that one motivation for the attacks is in part the conflict in Kashmir. So I wanted to ask, A, how you heard about what happened and what you're hearing from family members back home.
First off, I was shocked, as anyone else. To hear of innocent people being murdered like that anywhere is just, it just brings a very dreadful feeling. And I know that Kashmiris feel solidarity with those innocent people who were killed and their family. I was in New York. I think I was maybe at work, and I was just surfing the net and going on BBC, and I heard about this news, and immediately, there was a sinking feeling in my stomach, and because I knew where this was going to go, because Kashmir has been the bone of contention between India and Pakistan for so long, for so many years, since partition, and it seems to be the crux of the issues between India and Pakistan. So I think just there's that human level, but then from a Kashmiri perspective, I think I was there in 2001 after the parliament got bombed, and needless to say, the situation was extremely tense. We heard the Air Force above our heads, and it was, in the winter, and it was even more of a desolate situation. And there's definitely that fear that, this militarization within the valley and on both lines of the LOC, the line of control between India and Pakistan, will increase. And for Kashmiris on a personal level, living on the ground over there. I mean, they've been subject to this to terrorism for the last 20 years. You know, the civilians over there. And one of the things that we fear is that the focus will shift from, you know, what the, as far as Kashmir goes, from what the Kashmiris have gone through and their grievances to this war in India and Pakistan. And, you know, the grievances of the Kashmiris will be marginalized. And also there's this feeling that the overall perception of the Kashmiri and the Kashmiri Muslim in particular, you know, there'll be an even worse stigma attached to them after this because, I mean, I personally feel that these extremists are using the Kashmir issue for their own agenda, you know, and it's only going to hurt Kashmiris. You know, Kashmiris, you know, I have cousins and family who are trying to find opportunity outside of Kashmir, and they can't because there's a stigma attached to Kashmiris because of all this, you know, needless violence and terrorism. And they get branded as terrorists or at best an annoyance, you know. And this is only going to make, you know, that stigma worse for Kashmiris who seek opportunity outside of Kashmir because there is none there. I mean, there really is no opportunity for young Kashmiris who are completely disenfranchised. You know, they have to go to Delhi. They have to go to Bombay. For these opportunities, and there's going to be the stigma attached after this.
We need to take a short break, but we're going to continue our conversation with Mubashir Mohideen, Shujaat Nawaz, Zofin Ibrahim, and Siddharth Mir. We're talking about the attacks that struck Mumbai, India last week and how it is affecting relationships between Indians, Pakistanis, and their two countries. We'd love for you to stay with us on Tell Me More from NPR News. I'm Michelle Martin. I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. World AIDS Day was Monday. This week, we're having a number of conversations about how countries and individuals are trying to fight the epidemic. We'll tell you about how a new initiative to get people tested is making headway in one American city. That's in just a few minutes. But first, we're going to return to our roundtable discussion about last week's terror attacks in Mumbai, India, and how those attacks are affecting the already complicated relationships between Indians and Pakistanis and perhaps between Muslims and Hindus. Here to talk about this is political analyst and author Shujaat Nawaz. Also with us are Zofin Ibrahim. She's a Pakistani freelance journalist. Siddharth Mir. He's Hindu. He lives in Mumbai. He's a cinematographer. And Mubashir Mohideen. He's a Kashmiri American living in New York. Before we took our break, Mubashir was telling us that as a Kashmiri, he's concerned that there's a stigma attached to this because of this violence. And I wanted to ask both Siddharth and Zofin if you feel, is there a concern about relationships between individual Indians and Pakistanis on a sort of an individual human-to-human level? Have you noticed a tension or a cooling or anxiety, Siddharth?
A lot of them do have family back here in India, and a lot of my Indian friends also have family in Pakistan. So they do not want any kind of escalation in, you know, the already fragile relationship that they have because the relationship was getting better. There were talks between both the foreign ministers, and there were going to be agreements signed to actually, you know, better the trade and get easier visas. But things seem to be getting stalled because of this, and I'm really hoping that, you know, once all of this clears out, once the investigation is completed, that, you know, there aren't going to be any problems. I hope that the peace process actually continues.
Sophie?
On a personal level, I know that four of my family members and some distant relatives also were going to India, were going to Bombay actually this week, and they just cancelled because they didn't know what the situation was going to be like for them. But 2 weeks earlier, things were really looking up. And it's quite ironical, just when things seem to be looking bright, something happens. And it was very, very heartening to see that the prisoners were exchanged and the foreign minister's meeting was being held. And there were hopes that there would be an ease in the visa restrictions between the two countries. And I feel that media on both sides are not playing a very responsible role, because they are talking of war. Then generally the people start thinking of India as enemy country.
Sophie, if you could just clarify for us, you're saying you feel that the media in both countries have played a role in stoking tensions. What exactly are they doing? Are they passing on, what, unconfirmed rumors? Or what is it exactly that they're doing?
If India is talking about blaming Pakistan for the attack, and they are saying that Lashkar-e-Tayyiba is involved, and they have not given us evidence, media is talking about it. When it comes to Pakistani media, they talk about India's track record regarding Samjhota Express, when they said that Pakistan was involved in the parliament attack in 2001 in Pakistan was finger-pointed. So given that, it's very easy in South Asia to play on people's emotions.
I see. Shusha Melwaz, I wanted to ask you that as both Siddharth and Zofin were saying that these attacks come at a time when India and Pakistan seem to have relations improving. They were talking about easing visa restrictions or visits back and forth by top officials. Do you think, first of all, that that's all for naught now?
I hope not. But I think I agree with them that both countries were trying to make peace rather than war. And in fact, 2 days before the Mumbai attacks, the home secretaries of India and Pakistan met in Islamabad, and they signed an agreement under which both countries agreed to collaborate in against terror. So that was great progress. And in the same week, President Zardari had spoken by video conference to a group in Delhi and quoted his wife, the late Benazir Bhutto, as saying that every Indian has a bit of Pakistan in him, and every Pakistani has a bit of India in him. So the timing of the attack is obviously yet another attempt by militant groups to try and derail this process.
What would be the best outcome from your perspective?
The best outcome really is for both countries to tone down the rhetoric at the government level and for quiet diplomacy to take place, and to share the intelligence that has been received and have it verified, among others, by the United States, which has the capabilities. There is one question, though, which is it's quite intriguing. The only survivor of this attack is a young man who has been given three or four different names by people that are leaking the information to the news media in India. The only name which remains constant in different permutations is Ajmal and Kasab, and a place in allegedly in Pakistan called Faridkot, from where he came. According to December 1st Dawn newspaper from Karachi, they sent people to the three Faridkots that are villages in Pakistan, and they couldn't find a person with that name, and in fact that particular last name. There is another Faridkot in eastern Punjab on the Indian side, but you have to recall that whoever did this wasn't operating under his own identity, and that there were student ID cards, Indian student ID cards, also picked up from this group, according to these reports. And one of the parties that in the past was involved in attacks in Mumbai, much larger attacks in terms of the total number of people killed, was the student movement within India, which was allied with the Indian Mujahideen group.
Shusha, what are you telling me? That rather than this being another, to put this in American terms, rather than this being another 9/11, this could be another Oklahoma City? This could be an internal matter?
There have been internal attacks. I mean, the previous ones in Mumbai, the one in 93, for instance, on the stock exchange and other targets, 250 people were killed in 93. So it was much larger than the current attack.
And so you're saying that it's just not conclusive. There's really no conclusive evidence at this point.
It is murky, I would say, till the evidence is presented fully and verified, because it's also possible that it was transnational. So we have to wait for the evidence.
I wanted to get a final thought from each of you, and I wanted to ask, what would you like to see happen going forward. Mubashir, can I ask you first?
India must avoid encouraging the public speculation without any substantial evidence. I think they have to hold inquiries that are transparent, and the perpetrators have to be held accountable. And I think Pakistan has to be stringent on controlling and wiping out whatever terrorist groups exist in the country.
Siddharth, what about you?
Well, I'm really hoping for the government to actually step out of the way and let the citizens do something, because frankly speaking, everyone here wants change. Everyone wants someone to stand up. The sad part is that a lot of people have lost faith in the government. A lot of people have become anti-establishment, and they're looking for a leader. I myself am looking for someone who can actually, you know, take this anger and frustration in people and put it to some positive use. But that it's going to be very difficult to find a leader who can actually do that.
And Zofien, final thought from you?
Yes, the emotions need to be controlled on both sides. Then I think that the line of communication should continue to be open. And when India talks about investigation, it should be transparent. But when it is accusing us, then the accused party should be allowed to share all evidence that is there with them. We must insist on this.
Zofien Ibrahim is a freelance journalist based in Karachi, Pakistan. I want to apologize to our listeners for the difficulties with the phone service, and we appreciate that Zofien was willing to speak to us from there. She joined us from her home. We're also joined by Siddharth Mir. He's a cinematographer living in Mumbai. Shujaat Nawaz is an author and journalist based in Washington, D.C. He was kind enough to join us in our Washington, D.C. studios. And Mubashir Mohideen is a Kashmiri-American. He lives in New York, and he joined us from our New York bureau. And I thank you all so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.